I created the inside view around April 2021. So now it's about 2.5 years ago. And at that time, there was almost no content about what would happen if super intelligence would be developed very soon. And the goal was to like talk about these kind of topics in a way that was honest, and I would be like discussing this with people who had short timelines, like expecting AI to advance quite rapidly, because at the time there was quite a lot of noise and excitement around GPT-3. In particular, one of the reasons I made this podcast is I was going around on some like internet parties because there was still COVID. People were having discussions online, and I would talk randomly to people like Connor Leahy on a random party, and have him talk about things for like 40 minutes. And I thought, why am I the only one able to listen to this guy talk? We should have more people listen to this guy talk. And I had a few friends who have started doing podcasts. And I was talking to them and they were like, you know, it only takes like 2 clicks. You just press record and then you press upload and it's free. You don't have to do anything. And I thought, why not? I can, it's like low cost. I can just do it from my bedroom with a webcam and one of the most terrible microphones on the market. So that's why I did. I don't really enjoy the name, the Inside View. At the beginning, I wanted to call it Super Intelligence. If you look at the back at the first video, we tried to discuss why it should be called Super Intelligence. And I didn't want to be too tied to Bostrom's book called Super Intelligence. So I was like, nah, probably like think about something more general. Imagine in the future, I want to talk about like economics, about neuroscience, about things that are like not entirely related to super intelligence. I want to have a more general name, but at the end of the day, the Inside View is like a very technical term that like not a lot of people understand. And as the audience gets larger, I feel like the name is more and more cryptic, and it would be better to have something related to AI. And I don't think with YouTube you can change your name after like a certain number of subscribers, or if you've already changed your name first once or twice. So here we are, The Inside View, 2023, around 3,800 subscribers. And what has been the content so far? It's been like mostly interviews. I think most of the people who have subscribed because of some of the interviews I've made. They have enjoyed my second interview with Connor, one interview with Robert Miles, maybe recently an interview with Joshua Bach. And I guess if you look at the views and if you look at the what people watch or enjoy, there's a few videos that people watch the most, and then there's like some content that people watch less. And you could say that like most of the views come from, let's say, the top 10 videos. Maybe 90% of the view come from the top 10 videos. And as I continue making these videos, you might have noticed that I'm doing less and less interviews, because when I started the channel, there was like a lot of people I wanted to talk to, and I thought they were interesting. I thought they had interesting ideas to share. There was no content at all interviewing those people, and I thought that just like putting a camera in front of them and a microphone would be a way to have their ideas and their message, their way of thinking spread, to understand what was their inside view about the world, what was the unique perspective that they had from living the life that they had, and not just like the papers they were writing about, the data they were discussing, which is more outside view, so looking at what happens in the past and extrapolate from that. So you might have noticed, so this year I've done possibly like between 5 and 10 video explainers. If I think back at like what videos I enjoyed the most doing this year, it's probably going to be the one explaining my views on Doom from Paul Cusciano. I think the title right now says AI takeover does not mean what you think it means. And I enjoyed doing it because I learned how to do animation. I learned how illustration works. I learned how to like write a script, how to like explain something with like art and not just with words. And I had to work with Robert Miles to do the voiceover, to with even Paul Cusciano. I emailed him asking what was the scenarios he was thinking about in his blog post. I work with a designer that made the little graphic for the diagram, and even some guy who helped me like animate some of the stair movements. But it was really like a big project where I spent quite some time like thinking and about like how to make the things look great. And at the end of the day, it's mostly like art and not like a scientific or empirical way of looking at the world. Like there's no data backing the probabilities that Paul Cusciano assigns to the different scenarios for Doom. This is just like numbers he gave on an interview on I forgot exactly the name, but this crypto guy's podcast. And like the goal was just for me to like have a visual way of looking at those numbers or the different scenarios. I had started to make like a diagram like around like April, and people enjoyed the diagram, so I thought, why not like animate a diagram and make a video out of it? It would be quite easy. And then I realized how much work there was into creating other kind of art that would support the diagram. And at the end of the day, if you have now 3,800 subscribers who mostly care about the interviews you make, so they enjoyed like seeing Connor talk about AI, they enjoyed Robert Mall talking about AI, or even Ethan Caballero talking about scaling laws, then it kind of makes sense that people would be more excited about seeing more of these interesting people talk and not have like animation video on some kind of topic. But at the moment, to like talk to interesting people, I'm bottlenecked by the amount of interesting people in the world who have thought deeply about the risks from advanced AI. And I don't know if I'm going to find more of these people in the future, or if more people are going to be interested in the topic, so I can just basically talk about like anyone working in AI and they will have interesting thoughts about it. Or maybe I should just like make the channel kind of more general about AI and not just like about AI risk, and then I could just like talk to anyone. I tried a little bit of this when I went to ICML, the second top conference on AI this year. And I did talk to people who had interest in AI safety or were generally interested in general AI. And this is like something I always wanted to do, which is not talk only to the people concerned about AI risk, but talk to the other people who didn't really care about it and understand their views, because I think there was like a lack of communication between the different camps, if you can call them camps. I think at the end of the day, we just have different perspectives or priors on a lot of things. And I wanted to find what people often call cruxes, which is something that would change your mind if it happened. So let's say the crux is whether NVIDIA will ship 100,800 or 500,800 next year, then if NVIDIA was to sell only 100,000, I would update towards superintelligence arriving sooner rather than later. And so if the other person would also update differently, then it's like a double crux, something that would both make us change our mind in an opposite direction. So if we disagree on something, and if one event even happened and we agree on something, if it happens in one way or the other, we would agree, then it would be like a double crux, I believe. And I wanted to like talk to these people who have like very different perspective from me and see what were the double cruxes we had and how we could agree on things if the future looks different. At the end of the day, I think like some people really have a hard time articulating what exactly would change their minds, and if they could even change their minds about some things. And to be fair, I think I'm the first one to like have a problem in finding concrete piece of evidence that we update about AI. Like I think I would need like quite a lot of evidence to consider that we won't have any superintelligence in the next 50 years. But for instance, when I talked to Joe Shabbat a few months ago, I spent 3 hours trying to figure out if there was any crux we had, any concrete things we could change Joe Shabbat's mind, we could find those kind of things that could change his mind if they change. And actually, I think I somehow understand better like his way of thinking about things. But it's not like I understand his arguments or I understand any logic. I just understand that he has a very different approach in how he lives his life and how he decides to live his life. But I didn't understand exactly what were the arguments or if there was like any empirical evidence that like on which he was basing his motivations. And a lot of people in the comments I've been saying that I was not really like engaging with what he was saying, and I think that's a fair point, because what I really wanted to get at is like talking about AI and talking about what should we do if AI is going to happen fast. What is the best way to act to make sure humanity's future is going to be flourishing, is going to be humans and AI working together to explore the universe and not just like talking about things as if we didn't have any like moral imperative to make sure everything goes well. And I think like most of the disagreements I've had with people were over how likely it is that things will go well by default, and how far are we from things being able to self-improve or have a true impact in the world outside of just like an economic impact, but also able to take decisions for us, automate maybe tasks from the government, tasks from the military. And I think like if you don't agree that we'll have superintelligence in the next 50 years, then it's really hard to have a discussion, because most of my work is about how to make sure that things go well in this time frame. And if you really don't think that like anything very smart will happen in that time frame, then we cannot really like discuss what to do, because it will be like a very different frame on what is useful and what is urgent. And the second, let's say, prior is on things happening that will go well by default. And if you think things are 99% chance, things that have a 99% chance of going well by default, then you don't really see the point in trying really hard to make AI safe and having AI be aligned. I think that was the case with Josha, where he had like a very strong prior on AI being aligned by default, or maybe I don't really remember correctly his arguments. Maybe that's something different. But without talking about Joshua, there's like other people I interviewed. I think, for instance, Irina Rich, Blake Richards, or Kitrana at Google DeepMind, and they mostly had like at least like 90% chance of things going well by default. If I remember correctly, I might have been misinterpreting. And it's really hard to, you know, have a discussion when people have 99% or 90% chance of things going well by default. I think for me, it's kind of like when you think about what happened with COVID, where for young people in their 20s, there was a very low chance, if you were in good health, that COVID could kill you. And for older people, there was a very, at least like a higher chance, if you were at risk, of COVID killing you if you had it. And so we would have this thing happening where the actions we had to take were really different on whether you perceived the virus to be something very dangerous or something quite benign. And people had different ethical ways of looking at if something affects the world in a different way, could kill people or would be quite benign for other people. How should we ask people to behave in order to minimize the impact, the negative impact, and not ask people too much? And for AI, it's quite different, because if you believe in AI potentially having like an impact such as it will kill every every human at once, or most humans at once, or at least take over and like put us in a situation where we don't have control over our future anymore, it's not really like affecting some people or others. It's really like affecting everyone at once. But yeah, it assumes that this will be kind of this impact it will have. It's kind of like being in the same boat where we're like on the Titanic, and it's not like some people are on different parts of the world can just like fly to other parts of space, and as George Hotz was saying in one of his podcasts, like, can build spaceships and just like get the fuck out of here. We're all in the same like boat that might be sinking, and the goal of this channel was to have people like notice that was happening, and like decide what they want to do with their lives, knowing that was happening. And really at the beginning, because there was like no content and like no people that like actually were sharing these ideas widely, I felt like if the videos would get like a lot of traction, then people will be informed about maybe AI going very fast and the urgency to act now. But as we've seen at the beginning of the year, so the year of 2023, like in March or April, there has been like more and more exposure to AI, and previously, like in December with ChatGPT, we've had more and more people like know that this was happening, this was a thing, and AI is a risk being something that went from being a joke when some journalists asked this woman from the Biden government what were her thoughts on AI risk, where she kind of laughed the first time, and the second time she was taking it more seriously. Like, we've seen people take it more and more seriously. We've seen executive orders, we've seen export controls, and it seems like it's going to be something heavily regulated in the future, and at that point I'm not sure exactly like if trying to do outreach where I try to tell people that this is a thing is actually useful. Like there are like other types of content, even on Twitter, that there's like so much impression, so much people talking about it, that is there really a point in making videos trying to address these issues? I think one of the reasons why people would want to watch this is if they want to be more informed, if they want to understand what kind of research people are doing. Recently, I've had emails telling me that they really enjoyed my video with Colin Burns. That was like a year ago, trying to talk about his paper on, I think it's called contrastive search, unsupervised detection of lying in transformers, and I think the paper is called Discovering Latent Knowledge in Transformers or something. And recently, yeah, he published another paper with the Super Alignment team at OpenAI. And people have been telling me, like, hey, you should interview Colin. This was great. I really enjoyed the first one. And I want to understand what this guy is thinking about. What's his reasoning? Why the paper is important? What's the main motivation behind everything? And I'm grateful. I'm grateful that, like, some people enjoy some of the content, some people like are able to better understand people's positions. So I guess the value right now has mostly been in people who are already interested in this, want to learn more about like how are people thinking, or this person did this paper, like, what does it mean? Like, they want people to explain their paper orally. They want to understand the motivation. I guess that's the similar reasons for, like, the Neil Nanda channel, where Neil Nanda just goes through papers and tries to explain the motivation and why do people write this thing? What is it useful? And if you just, like, ask researchers about their work, you will get very different reasons or very different takes on their results than just reading the paper, because the paper is something to, like, explain to a reviewer why your results are great, and you don't see all the mistakes, you don't see all the things that failed, that were not the right direction. And in that sense, giving more context about this paper is something that makes a lot of sense. And to be fair, I think AI alignment is mostly about the people, right? Is you had this meme of OpenAI is nothing without its people. AI alignment is nothing without its people. It's people who are interested in how to make AI safe, and they have this motivation of trying to figure out what are some ways in which it could not be safe, and what are some techniques to give us some guardrails, or how to detect deception, how to detect lies, how to interpret what is going on inside of transformers, how to make sure our governance incentives are good. They're like so many different things we could think about when thinking about making sure AI goes well. And that's why in my channel, I had those videos on timelines, I had those videos on forecasting, on governance, on technical alignment research, on AI art, on interpretability, on deception. And even like economics and brain computer interface at the start, neuroscience, and I really wanted to like interview people who like had a different take on this, give like a different perspective on what would be like the key considerations moving forward. Now we're like in 2023, and there are other ways of hearing about people's takes on AI alignment. There's Daniel Farland's podcast, the AI Existential Risk Research Podcast, so AXRP. We have Dwarkesh Patel interviewing people like Dari Ramadei, Shane Legg, or Ilias Eskever. Even Yudkowsky. So I think we have other people doing interviews of people doing alignment research. We have other people doing interviews of CEOs. Even like research, I think Dwarkesh had Paul Cristiano recently. And like, what's the marginal impact of one more interview of people who already done? I've already done like a lot of interviews about AI. If you want to learn how Chainlag thinks about AI, there's an interview about it. If you want to hear about what Connor thinks about AI, now there's 10 interviews about it. I'm glad that like some of the interviews I made in video format were the first ones ever where we had like David Kruger talk on video about AI for 3 hours, Viktor Kokrovna talk for about Twitter Stern for 2 hours, or Colin Burns was a good one. Even Robert Brown, I think, was the first podcast I did. Or the Connor one was the first one where he was not talking about basic making the basic case for AI risk, like he was in the early days of GPT-3, but was like a more like entertaining versions of of Kunner's takes. And I'm glad I made all of these. I think Ethan Caballero was the first time the internet met this guy and really enjoyed his takes on scaling. I want to caveat this by saying that I've had like a lot of backlash from the video on broken neural scaling laws because I think people didn't really understand where that like a lot of what we were doing was like trying to explain his research in a entertaining way and trying to like you need to like see every statement he makes as like playing a character that is really confident that this paper is correct, and it's not I think doesn't really reflect beliefs about whether this paper is really important or not. It's really like it's I see it more like as a more like a comedic bit, and I think that's one of the goals of the channel is like to bring more entertainment, or I think it was really like about how I talk to people when I try to like learn about what their research is about. I try to get like an intuitive sense of what they mean and why they're interested in it, and mostly people will like make jokes and try to like give us some concrete examples that are like normal life examples, and that's why a lot of my videos end up being me trying to reframe in my own words like what people say, and some of my listeners often like email me and be like, oh yeah, I got what you like what the guy was actually meaning when you reframe it this way. And so I'm glad some people like find it useful. And yeah, I guess about the channel, for me, like when I look at the numbers, I always just see like a number and I'm like, okay, there's like this many thousand of people watching this interview and this amount of people like liked it or disliked it, commented and they said that they really enjoyed it and I'm glad. But at the end of the day, it's only like text on the internet and numbers, and it's hard for me to like really understand that there are like real human beings that like actually watch this and are informed by my video to take decisions. Until I go to AI conferences and even like group houses, I go in San Francisco, Canada, London, Cambridge, Paris, Asia, and I meet all those people everywhere I meet where they're like, oh, I've seen your stuff, and I'm really glad that those people enjoy it. So that's how I got the feedback that some people like actually like watch all of my stuff. Like because the field of people doing AI alignment research is so small, most people who do research in AI alignment or are interested in this topic and want to have AI go well, they all watch it. So it's like if a video gets like 2,000 views, it means like most people who are interested in like AGI have seen it. And so wherever I go, people will tell me like they've seen it. I see people like their YouTube like history, and they've watched like basically like they've skimmed through like every single one, and I'm glad that I'm having the impact I'm having, and on even on like some videos that I thought people were like less interested in. So as I was saying before, people are like really subscribed, I believe, for the interviews. And like a few weeks ago, I met this guy who was like, hey, I love your videos. I'm like, oh yeah, interviews. You're like, no, I like the explanation of papers because I haven't seen like anyone explain technically alignment papers before. And I think like you're the only one doing it. And I'm like, cool. Like I didn't know people were actually enjoying this. People were actually enjoying the walkthroughs of the papers. So that might be the thing I do more going forward, because as I was saying, like, the people I wanted to interview, I already did. There are more people that have already done gone on other interviews with other people, and if all these people are interviewing other people, like, I don't really have any points in doing it, except if it's like, if it's someone I find like underappreciated, or it's like we have a good connection, I think we could like bring a different perspective on this guy's research, or for instance, last year, I think some of the videos we really like brought people were not really like on YouTube. There was Robert Long talking about like AI consciousness. There was Shahar Havin about AI governance. Marcus talking about AI governance. Katja Grace about AI timelines. A lot of people recommend this video because she was the first one to advocate for like a pause on AI in July 2022. And I'm glad I made all of these videos. And if I keep meeting people who have interesting takes, I will ask them to come into my podcast and we'll do videos about it. As of right now, I'm not in the Bay anymore. When I was in the Bay, I would just be surrounded by like interesting people to interview. That's not where I'm planning to be in the next months. One thing I haven't addressed yet is why I have not made any videos in the past 2 months. And that was the point of this channel update, is to talk about like why there's been some gaps in how when I upload YouTube videos. So I guess like one of the first gaps has been after the Colin Burns, Krakovna, and David Kruger interview, like in January. I then like didn't upload for 2 months, and I guess I uploaded just like one video from NeurIPS, and then I kept like on uploading like older content, and I got this guy that basically like donated money to the channel, being like, dude, here's $50, please make more recent content, like stop uploading those old videos. And the reason why I was uploading those old videos is because I went to NeurIPS, I talked to these people, and I recorded some stuff, but I never got around like going through all of this footage and editing it. And I really thought like just like editing a video would take like so long, and for some reason, I wanted to take a break and just do something else for a while, and. That's why it took me like a few months to edit the NeurIPS video, like the one where like I talk about Alan Chan talks to like 10 different people, and like it's a compilation of a lot of interviews into one. And that's often what happens, is like I go to a conference, I go to a place, interview loads of people, and then there's some problems with it, like the footage is corrupted, there's some audio problems that I'm stuck with, and then so it, like, it stays on my hard drive for like a few months. But I guess another break has been probably like from April to July, where I basically started working on this animation video about Paul Cresceno's Views on Doom. And at the beginning I thought, oh, it's going to take like only like a couple of weeks. Because before working on this animation video, I was doing like a video a day, or like every couple of days, and the one I did just before that was the one where I explained Richard Noe's post on TAGI, and this video on TAGI took like 24 hours less in terms of like clock time. So I just like woke up, decided I would do this video, started like just following the blog post structure and editing it, and the video got like thousands of people enjoying it in a few days. And then I was like, oh, people seem to enjoy this like explanation of videos. They seem to enjoy the like quick pacing and nice animations, and even if the AI voice is a bit hard to hear, people like just like really enjoy this kind of explanations. So I was like, okay, I'm going to like explain something else I know well. And I decided to learn in some animation software to do better animations. And this took me into this rabbit hole where instead of like having some real thing I wanted to say, I just wanted to like learn a tool to do something pretty, but I didn't have the illustrations, I didn't have the art, I didn't have the script, I didn't have the story. And I just like started doing like fancy animation and something where I didn't have a clear thing I wanted to say. So that's a lesson for now. I have like all the lessons I've got from doing this video for a while and learning about like how hard it is to make something pretty if you don't really have the art ready or like the skills in making like pretty illustrations by yourself. Because whenever there's like a small bottleneck of, oh, I want to make this like robot with exactly this face or exactly this style, and you don't really know how to do it yourself, you have to like ask people and pay them or like find the right person, and it takes quite a while to like find the right design for everything, something that's coherent. So that's why, like, if we move back to July this year, I decided I was in the Bay, and I didn't want to spend more time doing this like animation video by myself. I wanted to spend time on other things. So that's why in July I decided to make one video a day. But in practice, as you might have seen, it is more like one video every couple of days. And I started like interviewing random subscribers or like interviewing people that were around me, like Nina Rimsky. I did, at the end of the month of July, I went to Hawaii, so I had for ICML, so I posed the daily uploads, but I also did like a bunch of like explainer videos on timelines, and I had to go through past footage, so there was the one video with Aaron Komatsasuki on GPTJ, it was kind of 1 year old, I went through, there was the Neurips content I went through. So I really like emptied my hard drive and went through like all of this editing for a month. And this like really made me consider how like fast it was to edit a video if you really put your heart into it. And it made me like reach out to people like Curtis Hübner from Eleuther AI, because people were like recommending me to talk to more Eleuther AI people. And so I did like a few videos I enjoyed and people enjoyed. And it made me realize that people were into high quality videos. So one guy commented that like the AI timeline stuff was interesting, but like he was into the channel because he wanted like high quality videos on like, let's say interviews or other things. But if I was just like using like some AI voice to explain something in like a few hours and going through like screen recordings with an AI voice was like not the content he was looking for. So that's why I think the daily content was interesting, but realistically, like if I want to make something good, it takes like at least like 2 or 3 days to like learn about something new for like a day and then think about what to make and then finish everything. So at least like 2 or 3 days. Which was like what I tried to start doing in after this period of July. So in September, I started like editing those videos with Joshua Bach or Neil Nanda. It takes like some time to edit the audio, sometimes to edit the video, sometimes to go through the transcript and get like all these parts and headlines and timestamps. And And then I moved on to more like explainer videos. That's why I tried hard to finish this animation video I was working on for a while. And I really thought the animation stuff would have kind of like a similar viewership as Rational Animations, because this was like an animated video with Robert Mao's voice. And I thought like this would do really well. And I thought I had put that amount of effort into it. But actually, it's not about the amount of effort you put into something. It's about how much value it is for people to watch it. And for instance, this like TAGI video took me like a few hours to make, but people really enjoyed it because it was a good content from a blog post. The content from the blog post was really like easy to grasp. The pacing of the video was really simple, really like structured the same way as the blog post, really easy. And that's why I decided to like try more like easy stuff. Like it takes me like a day or two. And whenever this Anthropic paper was coming out on like interpretability, I was like, oh, cool. We have like some recent stuff. It seems like very exciting. I'm just going to like do like a screen recording of me talking about it. And I just recorded myself talking about it for like a few hours, uploaded a video, and people really enjoyed it. I think it got like a lot of likes, people commenting that they really enjoyed having me talk to the camera about something. And that's why I made another one on this light detection paper the week after. And for this other one, I tried to come up with like a good way of presenting the paper. I tried to really understand the paper, go through the experiments. I even made like a little song on the ukulele about it. And at the end of the day, people were like less interested in this than the Anthropic one. I think because the Anthropic one had like a very catchy title, people were interested in the Anthropic paper. And it did worse. So when I look at like the amount of effort I put in something and the results, it's not correlated. It's not correlated at all. And I think I got quite disappointed because I thought the light detection one was better. And I told myself, okay, I'm just going to like stop doing this kind of video explainers for a while. Because it's not going where I want it to go. And instead, I'm going to like learn about transformers, re-implement transformer architectures, do language model for a while, see if I can go back to doing more like language model work and software work. So I said to like take a break for a few weeks after this like light detection paper one. And I went to Asia to meditate for 2 weeks. So I just meditated Vipassana for like 10 days or 2 weeks. And had a great time in nature. Came back to the UK and spent more time doing more like language model work, software work, and try to like post the videos for a bit because videos take a lot of time to have them being good, and I didn't know if I had the energy to do more at the moment, and I wanted to focus on other ways of making revenue and having an impact in the world. And I was thinking of like maybe just like doing software work or AI work and alignment work that is more through engineering rather than like media. And after like a month of doing that, I'm just realizing that all the problems I have with making AI content, I also have similar problems when I'm doing software where I don't know why I have the bug I have. I don't know why my loss is not going down as much as I wanted. I don't know how to fix it. And the question is, like, you get to choose the problems you want to have in your life. And I don't know, like, how much time we have until the singularity, if that's ever going to happen, or just like until superintelligence, but it's probably like years, not decades. And I think we all get to choose what are the problems we want to have in our life before that. We get to choose when, we get to choose like how we die. We don't get to choose like how we die. We don't get to change the probability of us dying. We get to choose if we're dying, trying to help the world, help AI be aligned, help to build some utopia, help to have a flourishing future for humanity. If you want to have an impact, if you want to do the what is probably like more morally good, even though it might mean like making like less than a dollar per video, or if you want to contribute to like making AI go fast in a risky way by building software or training models, and at the end of the day, I thought a lot about this, and I'm thinking actually my goal has never been to my main motivation has never been to like make the most money as I could ever have, right? It's always been like, I want to make AI go well. I did this internship in Oxford like in 2019, and the pay was like mostly like my university paying me to go there, and it wasn't great. And I didn't care. I didn't care about the money. I cared about going there, meeting people, having an impact, and because that's what I wanted in the world. I wanted to shift this probability of extinction by like the largest amount. And as I'm doing these videos right now, I'm talking to these people that messaged me about the podcast and the channel, and they're like, yes, this is useful. Please do more. Please interview Colin Burns again. Please do more video explainers. And I'm like, okay, guys, now I'm realizing that this is what you guys actually want. There are people, physical people I meet in London and in the Bay, and they're like, yes, do more of this. And I'm not doing it because it's going to make me rich. I'm doing it because I'm getting like a lot of like personal benefits from it. I'm doing it because I think it's useful and because people value this. And if you have found like any like video like valuable in the past, like do let me know. Like what motivated this entire like 1 hour podcast is just like one email. One guy, Christopher, emailing me a few days ago being like, dude, I love your content, do more. And I'm like, I wouldn't have done it without this simple email. It took like 5 minutes of his time, and now we're here. So if you enjoy it, do let me know. Message me. I love to hear people. And it's not the YouTube crap of like, please comment. No, like you can just like email me. Like I don't fucking care about more comments in the video. And yeah, I think I'm just getting old. I feel like we're getting old because we're all the same age. As how many years we have until a singularity, and if it's in 2 years, if it's in 5 years, we're all like 75 years old because we're all going to die, possibly in a very short amount of time, and we all get to choose how we die. And if you're watching this, it means that like you can also choose how you die, and you can also choose to die fighting, and you can also choose to die by wanting the world to be pretty and not just personal benefits, not just like investing in NVIDIA and seeing like the line go up. Like, because most, if everyone starts buying NVIDIA, then NVIDIA makes profit and AI goes even faster. And one of the goals of the channel was to influence people, or at least motivate people to do what is right and not only what is profitable or what is interesting. And if you could just like tell me like if you have ever like changed your mind about something and changed your actions in the world because of the channel, that should be great. I will then know that like I'm actually having an impact. I'm actually having people change their behavior or like inform their decisions about the world, and I will continue doing more. I think it's probably going to be more video explainers. I might do more remote stuff, interviews, but like let me know who would you want to have me interview, but I could do it in the future, but I don't have any guarantees of that. It's probably going to be more video explainers. If you subscribe for the interviews, maybe like unsubscribe. I'm planning on possibly doing more stuff in the next year. Maybe taking a break for the next few days and then doing more stuff, explaining papers more regularly in the future. Because, like, nobody really, like, cares about how I'm experiencing life. But this is a podcast where I talk about the thing I actually care about, so here it is. I went to this nightclub a few days ago in London, and I went to like another party in Oxford where I had to sleep at like 5 a.m. and like hear music for like 5 hours and people dancing. And I used to like enjoy this when I was like a kid, when I was like young, when we had time. And now it just makes me sad. Now I just feel like I wasted my time. I wasted like 6 hours of sleep. I wasted 5 hours of my time just like talking to people who like live in a different universe. There's a universe of people who actually care about making AI go well and who actually understand that like things are going very fast. And then there's the universe of people dancing in a nightclub in London. And it doesn't make any sense. Or at least it makes less and less sense to talk and just like have fun when the world, when we're at this stage where we're like acting and doing things in the world is pressing. And actually like the parts of my time in the past few weeks I enjoyed the most were like watching a biopic of Gandhi, where you see like him like starving for like weeks to like ask for peace, ask for like laws in South Africa, or like peace between Pakistan and India, and I want the world to look like this. I want the world to look like we take this seriously. We like go on the streets, we stop eating for 4 weeks until we get some guarantees that companies will not build like will not like train huge language models. I want the world to take seriously that like AI risk is real, and that we like have a shot at like making things be better if we do the right regulation, if we do the right research, and I don't know, like now just like I read. I start reading like Aristotle, like Nicomachean Ethics, and I'm like this guy is actually thinking about how to build a society with character, about like how to act ethically in the world, and I had like no, I had no interest in this when I was a teenager. I just thought of like doing what is interesting to me and what is fun, and the more we end up in this world where all our actions converge to the same thing, the more I realize that the only thing that actually matters if we don't really have control over our future is how we choose to die and how we decide, like, what will be our last actions. And maybe, like, our last actions, if they're all in, if we all decide to have something in the decision of, like, what is something that will put us in the right direction and be morally good or ethically good, then we can just like all do something about more alignment research, about better regulations, about AI maybe going a little bit slower. And I thought about, like, maybe I want to do other things in my life. Maybe I want to, like, I think a lot of people could think, like, oh, if we only have, like, a few years to live, like, why isn't Yudkowsky, like, having fun and partying if there's only, like, a few years to live? Why, like, is actions doesn't reflect his beliefs of doom? Like, no, if you really think that something is very high, is, like, very likely that the thing will go bad, like, you want to get your best shot at this. You still want to do what is good. You still want to die with dignity. You still want to give it all you got. And if this sounds kind of sad and depressing, I think this is maybe, like, the most beautiful thing you can do. I think this gives, like, life a lot of meaning. Instead of just thinking that, like, life is about pleasure or happiness, or now it actually makes sense. It's not only about you. It's about the entire Litecoin. It's about the entire humanity. And so, like, maybe what you want is to do something bigger than yourself, to do something that other people will find good, that other people will benefit from. And you will wake up in the morning and you'll be thinking about how your actions impact the entire humanity, and not, it won't be just about, like, how to be happier yourself, and how many people can we actually make happier? Billions, if not trillions, if you think about the long-term future. And I hope this gives you hope. I hope this gives you motivation. I plan to do more videos like this where I talk to the camera without any preparation. Maybe more video explainers, maybe more interviews, but probably not, like, the same interviews as we had before in person in the short term. That's probably it for today. Thanks for watching. My camera battery is ending, or at least, like, the SD card is full. So I have to stop right now. See you in the next video.